And welcome to the Soto Mojo podcast number 11. We're here with Colby Patnode, Dan Clark, and Riley Baker, all Soto Mojo contributors. And guys, you want to say hello?
What's up?
Hey.
Hey, what's happening?
All right. So, Mariners had a, you know, tougher week, finishing 3-4 against the Twins and the Texas Rangers, but we're able to salvage the one win in Texas this weekend and avoid getting swept. Guys, what are you thinking? Colby, you want to go first, and we'll make the loop, Riley, and then Dan?
Sure. You know, this weekend was frustrating, I would say. The pitching staff was bad for the most part. Yesterday it was pretty solid. Yeah, but, you know, it's every time you think you're ready to give up on this team, they go and they put up a four spot in the first inning against Yu Darvish. So, I mean, you never really know with this team. You know, overall, a 3-4 road trip isn't great, but it does kind of keep them where they need to be on the road, which is just playing around 500 ball. And now the schedule really opens up for them. So, you know, again, it was frustrating weekend, but they did just enough to kind of keep me from jumping ship on Sunday. So, despite the four outs that they gave up on the bases. But, yeah, you know, other than that, throughout the week, it was, I don't know, I'd give it like a C if I was grading it. But, yeah, the Texas series was certainly frustrating.
For sure.
Yeah, I agree. They did enough. It could have been worse than 3-4, I guess. 4-3, 5-2 would have been great. But now we're going into a homestand. You know, Felix is coming back on Friday. Kuma, I think, might be back this weekend, I saw.
Yeah, that's what they were saying.
So, yeah, so, I mean, what are we, 3 games under .500? That's hopefully this team gets healthy, you know, stays healthy, can find a consistent grind. And, I mean, what was it, 3 weeks ago or something, we were 10 under .500. So,
yep.
Just like Colby said, like, they just keep fighting back just when you think all is lost. So, hopefully things can kind of get turned around in, you know, hopefully they can go above 500 this homestand.
Which will be tough to do considering we're playing the Tigers and the Astros.
It will be tough, but, I mean, yes, we can always stay hopeful.
Yes,
as a Mariners fan, you have to stay hopeful.
You can never question this team because you never know what they're going to do. Dan, what are you thinking?
Yeah, the last week, it has been sort of tough, especially like the boys said there against down in Texas. Minnesota, the first four games were just seesaws the whole way. Minnesota are sneaky. They're a sneaky good team. Especially the last, I can't remember who it was, but the guy that pitched on the last day in Minnesota.
Rios.
Yeah, he's really good. Yeah. Sort of come out of nowhere this year, and he's been really good. But yeah, as a mate of mine sort of reminded me, he's a big sort of Texas fan. The last weekend wasn't good. Hopefully we can sort of get a couple back against him later in the year. But yeah, this week, hopefully coming up, we can get back home. Like you guys said, we've got Felix on Friday, Kuma on, hopefully if everything goes well with his rehab today, on Sunday. And I think they said Segura's a chance of coming back this week too.
Yeah.
A couple of rehab games in Tacoma and then getting straight back in there. So, mate, by the end of the week, we should have three pretty big key pieces back in there, hopefully.
Yep, you're definitely right. Iwakuma was supposed to make his rehab start tonight, or his second rehab start tonight, I guess. He pitched for Modesto, four scoreless, obviously. I mean, it would make sense he would throw four scoreless, but, you know, it looks good. He's pitching again in Tacoma tonight. And, yeah, should make it back by this weekend on the right rest. But, yeah, so the same also, yeah, with Felix. He threw his last rehab start this weekend, went six innings, didn't give up a run. which is a good sign for the Mariners. Well, obviously only against AAA bats, he, you know, still pitched well. He had good command. And everybody kind of said that, yeah, he looked ready to go and ready to be back. And obviously just having another competitor like Felix on the mound, there's just a stark difference in, you know, who's, you know, I mean, just like, even if his, you know, pitching isn't what it used to be or whatever, just having his presence, you know, on the mound, in the clubhouse, et cetera, it's a booster for the Mariners. So, you know, we can hope that that goes well when he comes back. Up next, we've got James Paxton on the agenda for this podcast. Back-to-back tough starts for Big Maple. What do you guys see there? Are you a little bit concerned? Are you not concerned? Or are you, you know, just as optimistic? Everybody has bad starts. Colby, you can take this one first.
I would say there's a little bit of concern. It's not the primary, I don't think it's injury related, which I'm sure is the bigger concern, but the fastball velocity is about what it's been, just, you know, half a mile or so less than it has been, so that doesn't seem like the issue. The last two starts, it just kind of looks like he doesn't have command of the fastball, and when he can't throw the fastball where he wants it, the curveball is worse and the slider is worse, so you have to he really has to dominate with the fastball and get it where he wants it to go, because it really doesn't have a lot of movement to it. It's a pretty straight fastball, but he throws it at 98, you know, 98 to 100 miles per hour, and then he's got the hammer curveball and all that other stuff to back it up, so he doesn't have to. But if he doesn't have command of it and he's leaving that in the middle of the plate, he can't get to the slider or the curveball or any of that stuff. So he really has to work on that. He says he thinks it's something that's mechanical, and it's something that he can fix, which, you know, makes sense for Paxton, who's had some issues repeating his delivery and all that stuff in the past. So hopefully it's just a couple bad starts where he didn't have it, and he corrects it and he goes back to being close to what he was at the beginning of the year. And the other thing, too, is that we could not possibly have expected James Paxton to be as good as he was before he hit the DL.
Yeah. I mean, exactly.
He was the American League Cy Young winner, almost runaway. Yeah. At that point, ahead of Sale and all those other guys. And so, you know, it's a little bit regression to the norm, probably. It's a little bit he's trying to get a feel back for his fastball. But, yeah, you know, I would say at like 10% in the back of my mind, I'm a little bit concerned. But mostly I'm just looking at this as just a blip in the radar, and he'll come back in the next start or two, and he'll be back to his old self.
Yeah, yeah. Riley, anything to add to that?
I mean, no, Colby kind of just hit all the points there. You're good. I can try and elaborate, I guess. I mean, I kind of think it's, yeah, the same thing, how it's just mechanical. It happens with every pitcher at some point. Something gets off, timing gets off a little bit somewhere in the delivery. So I think he'll just keep working on things, work with the coaching staff, and yeah, like Colby said, a start or two, he should be back to being able to control his pitches and throw some strikes, quality strikes.
Dan, what are you thinking?
Yeah, and like the last two guys said, I think they've pretty much covered it. Yeah, I'm not really too worried. I think he goes Wednesday against Verlander, see how that one goes, but yeah, no, I'm not too worried as of yet. I think you'll pull through pretty quick.
I think that's the same thing I'm feeling right now with Mitch Haniger. Kind of like the part about how no one could have expected him to be as good as he was at the beginning of the season. And if you just kind of, you know, can play to a fraction of that, or not a fraction, but, you know, like three quarters of that or something like that, you know, play quality baseball, but not like to the point where you're just dominant. You know, people are going to be okay with that. And so I'm hoping the same thing, you know, can happen with both Paxton and Haniger to that regard. Yeah. So Paxton, I guess next we'll hit the draft. Colby, you want to give us a rundown of the draft, what you liked, what you didn't like, whatever?
Sure. I guess we'll just start at the top here. The first round, the Seattle Mariners selected Evan White, who is a first baseman from the University of Kentucky. He's a really interesting player in that he is one of the most athletic players in this draft, and yet he plays first base. Not typically a position, especially for Mariner fans who have watched Daeho Lee and Adam Lind and even Daniel Vogelback a little bit play first base. So, I mean, White is a really interesting player in that regard. Somebody, I believe it was Jim Bowden of I think he's still with ESPN. He came out and said that when Evan White signs, which he did this morning, I believe, or last night, when he signs, he instantly becomes the best defensive first baseman in professional baseball. So
Wow.
right away you have an elite defensive first baseman if the Mariners choose to keep him there. There are some scouts, including some coaches from Kentucky on the staff there, who think that Evan White could turn into a solid above average center fielder and be really good in the corners. That's how athletic he is. The bat, he controls the zone really well, which we all know DePoto really likes. He takes his walks. He's continued to grow into some power over the last few years at Kentucky, which is all great. We're talking about a guy who legitimately is a good enough athlete. He can steal 20 to 25 bases a year. And, right now you would probably estimate the power at about 15 home runs, but as we know, power is kind of the one thing that you can learn at the big league level as a hitter. You can kind of grow into more
Yeah.
power as you get bigger and stronger. So you're looking at a potential 2020 Gold Glove first baseman. Just the three comps I saw that really, piqued my interest. Jason Churchill of Hero Sports and Prospect Insider, he said he reminded him a lot of a right-handed Kristen Yelich, who is, obviously an all-star center fielder for the Marlins. Dan O'Dowd of MLB Network comped him to AJ Pollock, who is a really good center fielder for the Diamondbacks. And then I believe it was Jim Callis said he reminded him a lot of Cody Bellinger, who is probably the National League Rookie of the
Yeah.
Year right now. So, I mean, those are three really exciting comps for Mariner fans. The comp I kind of had was Eric Hosmer, who is, also another solid player. So White is a really nice pick there. The one that most people seem to be excited about, myself included, though, is the second round pick. His name's Sam Carlson. He's a high school pitcher from Minnesota. I know that Christopher Crawford of Hero Sports had him as the number 15 overall prospect in the entire draft. I know that MLB Pipeline, MLB Network, or MajorLeagueBaseball.com, their prospect rankings had him 15th as well. By all accounts, this guy shouldn't have been there when the Mariners picked in the first round, and he falls to the second round due to some signability concerns. But one thing I think you can guarantee about Jerry DePoto and the staff is that they would not have taken somebody that they did not know that they were going to be able to sign. So he's got really good stuff. He's got 3+ pitches already, and the changeup that he's working on that could be average one day. He throws a lot of strikes, which is kind of rare for a high school guy. 93 to 94 with the fastball, pretty good off-speed stuff. And even though he's a high school guy, I think there's a chance that he could actually be in the big leagues in 2 or 3 years as opposed to the 4 to 5 years that most high school kids take, just because he's so advanced with his command and his control. So I think when you're looking at Evan White, he should be up no later than the start of the 2020 season, maybe even possibly 2 years from now in the middle of the 2019 season. And then Carlson, I think the earliest you probably could be is 2020, but he's got some real good stuff. So those are the top two picks. Pretty much everybody agreed that they were home run picks for the Mariners. I'm going to be rewriting the Soto Mojo prospect list, and I think both of these two guys are going to be in the top four. I mean, that's how talented they are. And then you look at the rest of the draft. There was a lot of money. There's a lot of below slot guys that got drafted because they need the money to sign Sam Carlson. Evan White took a below slot deal, which is great. It saved the Mariners $300,000. It seems like they're going to be able to sign Carlson. So, go ahead.
Carlson's currently the only unsigned out of the Mariners' top 11 picks, but judging by his, Twitter and just like kind of the way he's treated this, he's gonna sign with the Mariners eventually. I don't know when that's gonna be, but he was at Safeco last a couple days ago, had just kind of a get together with the Mariners and some other people, and he said he really enjoyed it, that kind of stuff. So yeah, it wouldn't you know, take a whole lot for them to sign him, I don't think.
He'll get above slot money. He probably gets roughly first round money, but you know, again, to get a top 15 draft prospect in the second round is good for any team, but it's really nice to see for the Mariners, who took a risk on that. We've seen in the past they weren't exactly, you know, willing to take a lot of risk in the draft, but it's nice to see. Just real fast, a few names from the later rounds to keep an eye on. David Banuelos, I think is how you pronounce it. He's a catcher from Long Beach State. He is a defensive first catcher who's going to make the big leagues as a backup catcher. He's got some pop, but you know, his best tool, he's a really good defensive catcher who threw out 61% of runners who tried to steal against him this year. Yeah, guy's got a big arm. He knows how to frame pitches. He blocks well. He throws guys out, and he's got some pretty good pop. Max Roberts is a guy from community college. He's a local guy, but he plays at Wabash County Community College. Big time stuff. 7th round pick. 6'5". Still growing into his body. He looks really good. He averaged more than, I think he had 99 strikeouts in 96 innings this year, which is really nice. And then, you know, finally the last guy, not to hog all the time here, but there is a outfielder. I only have his last name here. His name is Cook. He was a 8th rounder, I believe it was. He's an outfielder. He can run around. He's got a little bit of pop. He's a good player. So those are just some guys to keep an eye on.
Sounds good, Colby. I think I agree. There's a on the website, Colby wrote a breakdown of those first two picks, Evan White and Sam Carlson, with, you know, just some other various stuff and some highlight videos. So check that out. I guess we don't have a whole lot else, but let's just take a second to relish in the fact that Mike Zunino is playing like a very quality Major League Baseball player right now, and we don't have to throw qualifiers on his play to justify the fact that he's taking up a roster spot, because the guy's hitting like 250 right now, and he's raised his batting average like 110 points in the last couple of weeks. So,
and he now holds the Mariners catches RBI record.
Oh,
like
right.
June
right.
19 most, or something like that.
Yeah, yeah, most in a month with 22, and the last one was 21. And he's playing phenomenally right now. That stint in AAA really, you know, did him well, because he was really struggling. And, you know, I'll be the first to admit I was calling for a new option at catcher, and I didn't know where that option was going to come from, but to send him down for, you know, 2 weeks like they did, to have him come back and hit like this, you know, that's about as good as they could have hoped. You just kind of hope that, you know, he'll sustain that through the rest of the year. And, you know, I mean, not necessarily he doesn't have to keep raising his batting average like he is, but, you know, just, you know, if he can consistently hit about 250, you know, that would be phenomenal for Mariners and, you know, Mariners fans and stuff like that. Yeah, so on the upcoming, we'll just kind of quickly look at that, and you guys can give your thoughts. Mariners have 4 against the Tigers tonight, tomorrow, Wednesday and Thursday, and then 3 at home against the Astros. Tonight's game's on ESPN, and before we started recording, we talked about the Mariners ESPN curse. We think that the last time the Mariners played on ESPN was last year against the Cubs, when everything just melted down late in the game, and national TV hasn't really been good to the Mariners in recent times, so hopefully they'll reverse fate tonight against the Tigers at home. So what do you guys think going into this week? We're 34 and 37, sorry, and we are kind of looking to get those guys back. You know, it's looking like this could be a good week. What do you guys predict is going to happen? Dan, you can start, then we'll go Riley, and then we'll end with Colby.
Yeah, this week, I'm a little bit positive about this week. Like you said, we've got 4 against the Tigers first. It's sort of be tough, but big Astros series on the weekend. But the thing with the Astros at the moment is they're missing, they've got on the DL. Keuchel's on the DL, McCullers is on the DL, Morton's on the DL. And I think they've got another starter on the DL as well. So they've got their 4 of their five sort of projected starters all out at the moment. So if we're going to strike, I suppose this weekend's when we're going to do it, especially with Felix coming back Friday and hopefully Coomer on Sunday. So, I'm pretty positive about this week. And the first three games against the Tigers, you got probably our top three guys going. You got, is it Davilio tonight, Miranda tomorrow night, and then Paxton after that. So, yeah, I'm bullish about this week, I think. I think we can do a bit of damage this week.
Yeah, I'm kind of confident for this week as well. Just like we've said, we got some people getting healthy, coming back. Seven games at home is always nice. If we could go 4-3 on this homestand, that'd be great. Always better to go above 500 than below 500, obviously. And then, like you said, Dan, Houston's kind of been hurting. I think they're 4-6 over their last 10 games. So maybe they're a little bit vulnerable right now, and hopefully we can take advantage of that.
Yeah, I think a 4-3 week is pretty good. It's always tough to sweep a four-game series. It's tough to win three games in a four-game series. So I always just kind of – I'm hoping for three, and I think the matchups look like we can probably take three from Detroit. And then just don't get swept over the weekend. Houston is struggling right now, but it doesn't seem to matter what Houston looks like or who's playing for Houston. Houston just gives Seattle problems. It's a little hesitant. I'm a little hesitant to just assume that Felix and Iwakuma are going to come back and be really good against a really good Houston Astros lineup. So I'm just, don't get swept. Find a way to go 4-3. And then you guys were talking about, you look at this schedule. There's 19 games until the All-Star break, I believe. 16 of them are at home. You have a three-game series against the Angels without Mike Trout next week, and then you are home for nine more after this seven-game road trip. So I mean, there's a few days off thrown in there too, so they're not going to be tired or they shouldn't be tired or overworked. You're getting your guys back. This is when you have to make hay. Otherwise, I think you're going to have to start looking at the idea of selling at the deadline instead of buying.
True.
So hopefully, at the very minimum, you need to go 3-4 this week, but you probably should go 4-3. And heck, if you can go 5-2 and get back to 500 before you head back out on the road, that would be outstanding. So I think they can go 4-3. I'd be happy with 4-3. 5-2 would be fantastic, but I think that's probably a little bit too big of a stretch this week.
Yeah, especially with who we're playing. I agree with what you guys are saying. Optimistic. Hope to see, good stuff from the Mariners this week. Tune in tonight, ESPN 9:10 Central. 7:10 Pacific, I guess. But it should be good. We'll hope for the best here. Go Mariners. Any closing thoughts before we sign this podcast off? Anybody?
Looking at the schedule, actually, we have these seven games and then an off day at home, and two against Philadelphia before we go to LA.
There we go. Even better.
Even better. We could take a couple from the Phillies. Why not?
Mm-hmm. And we did it earlier. Might as well do it again.
Yeah. I think the Oakland A's are in that schedule too. I mean, there's some pretty bad teams that the Mariners are going to be playing between now and the All-Star break, so they really need to take advantage. I just wanted to point this out real fast. According to Fangraph's WAR metric, do you guys know who the most valuable Mariner has been this year?
I don't know.
I think I saw this or heard something about it. Gerard Dyson, I think, is right up there.
He is number one with a 1.8 WAR, despite a 244 batting average and a 326 on base.
His defense and WAR has to be sky high.
Yeah, and he really doesn't make many mistakes,
True. Mm-hmm. Except maybe last night when he almost got picked off. Or did get picked off. I don't remember. Did they overturn
it?
He did
get picked off.
Picked off. Yeah. Oh, that's rough.
17 stolen bases, though, and he's the best defensive outfielder in baseball so far. And just real fast, number two there, Ben Gamel, actually.
I can definitely believe that. He's hitting
all right.
Ben Gamel's crazy. And Ben Gamel's only played, half of our games so far this season because he started the season at AAA. Ben Gamel's been a really good good thing to see this season. Hopefully he can play, you know, his heart out like he has in the rest of the year. That would be awesome.
Yeah, at some point we're going to have the discussion whether or not Ben Gamel is just a nice story or if he's actually somebody who the Mariners need to incorporate into their core and to be one of those next guys with Haniger and Segura and the younger guys like Seager, too.
He was that he was the International League MVP last year, or the last season he was with the Yankees. So I think he's always shown like promise, but this year he's really, you know, blasted out, you know, like he has, you know, he's at 350 right now. But yeah, so I agree though that, you know, maybe it is like a nice story, kind of like the Taylor Motter, who's, you know, he's hitting 200 right now, but at the beginning of the year it was like, oh, who's this dude? This guy's crazy. Grand slams and, you know, like everything. But, you know, at the end of the day, he's a 200 hitter. And he's not the Mariners' answer. I mean, obviously not the Mariners' answer at shortstop because Gene Segura is the Mariners' answer at shortstop. But he's not one of those players that the Mariners need to, like, key on building around and stuff like that. So, yeah, I agree with that statement.
Just with Dyson there, I was talking to – now, I forget somebody on Twitter there the other day, and they actually asked me the question, would you re-sign either Dyson or Cishek? I'd be interested to sort of hear your guys very quickly points on those two. Like, me personally, Cishek, I'm at this stage probably, I don't know, probably not. But Dyson, like you said, he's the best defensive outfielder in the MLB at the moment, so and with all that speed, if you can get him at the right price, something sort of low, I'll definitely think about keeping him.
Yeah. Dyson's kind of like the perfect fourth outfielder in that you can start him for weeks at a time and he's not going to kill you. You can put him in the game late as a defensive replacement at all three spots. And again, an absolute weapon on the bases. So, I mean, you put him in there, Zunino gets a double or something, and he's the tying run. You take him out, you put Dyson out there to run for him, and now you have a real threat on the bases. So, if the money's right, yeah. But, I mean, the guy is 31.
True.
I think the Mariners love what they have in the outfield, coming down the pipe, too. Outfield depth is a real strength of the Mariners now. True. So, but, yeah, if the money's right, yeah, I would absolutely consider Dyson. I probably wouldn't consider Cishek unless the money is just ridiculously low.
Agreed.
Yeah, I agree. I'd love to see Dyson back again. He's kind of, at this point, one of those valuable pieces that a team picks up, you know, at the deadline or during the home stretch of the end of the season, just as one of those fourth outfielder guys, or you can throw him into pinch run to steal a money bag at the end of near the end of the ball game. So, yeah, he definitely has a lot of value, and yeah, if the price is right, for sure, I agree.
Alrighty, well, I think that concludes this episode 11 of the Soto Mojo podcast, but we'll try and get back at it either, you know, this week or, you know, something like that, and go Mariners, you know?
Go Mariners.
Take care of business, guys.
Let's do it.